And what it proved to me is, you know, to some degree, when you become obsessive and you have great preparation and will towards a common goal, your chances of getting to that goal and realizing it are much greater.
This is the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing. Now, here's your hosts, Paul Frichtner and Adam Baum, with the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller.
Welcome into another episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. Great to see you all here. Paul Frichtner alongside Adam Baum and the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller. We are presented by Deer Park Roofing, as well as the official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and our friends at TG Solar. Sean, it's been a couple of weeks since we haven't had a chance to catch up with you. So now I've been kind of settling into the off season here a little bit, transfer portal heating up. How's everything going for you just in general?
You know, it's going well. I think I speak for all college basketball coaches. You know, the landscape and just the industry itself is flipped upside down. And I would even say it flipped upside down and then turned again, you know, really in the last 2 years, almost from when I came here as the new coach. Yeah. It's just, you know, the multiple transfers now with no penalty of sitting out. You don't have to have graduated and you can still go to three schools, in some cases more, you know, name, image, and likeness being a part of that. I think everybody's, you know, more sure of that now. I think it's more on the minds of whether it be the players you coach, those that you're recruiting, and then the institution and, you know, the collective and the people that work alongside you as the coach. So that world has grown, expanded. And so I say all that because there was a time when the Final Four ended, you had a few house cleaning things to clean up. Your priority was your players that just finished the season, the ones you were currently coaching. Maybe you had a little bit of recruiting to do. Now it's almost a continuation of the regular season is how I would look at it and describe it. And that is that, and it's not going to end until maybe June. So everybody's braced for it. This is what we signed up for. Very, very busy time. I would say the busiest time that I've had in the time that I've been at Xavier.
Any sleep?
I try to sleep. Yeah, some guys act like they don't, but they really do. I try to sleep. Yeah, so I'm getting sleep. Yeah.
No, I mean, to your point, like we appreciate you making time and wanting to do this because I think everyone who follows college basketball understands right now that it's like, to a certain extent, it feels like the wild, wild west. You know, mm-hmm. I think last I saw there's over 1,400 players in the transfer portal, and that might have been yesterday. So we might be at 1,500 by now. And to Xavier's credit, like you guys are talking to a lot of people. You have a lot of spots to fill. And we appreciate you taking the time and doing this. But I think it's fun to point out, like, we're in a new setting right now. We're in this lovely Xavier film room, a new addition to the arena here, and we've got this fancy new backdrop here. Josh, our video editor, he did a nice job. If you pay attention here at the very top, those are the numbers of all the guys who have been on the podcast.
No, that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys.
So we're going to fill that up hopefully here over the course of this show.
Yeah, we definitely will.
A lot of Easter eggs thrown in down here and then everybody up there.
Again, the numbers across the top of the screen are all of the guests we've had on our podcast. The one in red is Daylon Terry. He's the only Arizona player that's been on here. I see 23 is highlighted. That's Byron Larkin. His number is retired.
Yep.
Is there anything else? The blue means a Xavier player, former Xavier player.
Yep. So hopefully that'll continue to fill in here as we go along on this show and progress. But, yeah, just some nice touches pointing back to the history.
I'll double back with number 8 in blue there, Quincy Oliveri. And you know, I just said goodbye to Quincy. He left and, you know, I think it's, I would like to point this out. How does it work for somebody that transfers from one program, comes into yours with only 1 year to play and then leaves? Man, it goes by so fast. You know, Quincy arrived on our campus in June. Last summer, we went to the Bahamas on what we, you know, referred to as our foreign tour. So that gave us some added time on the court as a team, and then the experience itself of going there for, in essence, 5 days or 6 days, I think is where we were down there for. And but you get through the summer, into the school year, man, it's like, wow, he's gone. Like, he doesn't live here anymore. He packed up. He's on to the next chapter of life. But I brought him up because in the world of name, image, and likeness, and use the terms transfer portal, I don't know if any person or player could have done it better than him. You know, if our opportunity is a lemon, he squeezed all of the juice out of the lemon. He really did. I mean, his practice habits, his personality, showing up every single day, maximizing his ability, his potential, working with his teammates and everybody here who was willing to work with him, including working towards getting his graduate degree. He's going to continue to take classes in our graduate program this summer. And at the end of the summer, he'll have a Xavier graduate degree in addition to his Rice undergraduate degree. But, you know, the guy on the court was a stud. We asked him to do a lot. He met our standard. I mean, scoring over 40 points in a game, first player that I've coached that's done that. He did it in a Big East game. I think 30 or more, three times or four times. Yeah. In meaningful games, one of which was the Crosstown Shootout, I believe. If he didn't get 30 in a Crosstown Shootout, he was close.
Yeah, I think it was 27 or something.
I think. Yeah, right.
So
there.
That didn't even count as a 30-point yeah. game. But
it felt like 30, though.
But yeah. He made more threes. Trayvon Blewett, who I think everybody that's a Xavier basketball fan reveres, and for good reason. You know, Quincy broke his record, single-season record, of three-pointers made. By the way, he shot a percentage that was number one in the Big East. Finished second Big East in scoring, first overall in all games. And, you know, I think watching him leave, I flashed through all of those moments and just was happy for him. Where I was really sad is I felt like he deserved to play in the NCAA tournament, and we weren't able to do that this year. And you only get one shot at it if you're him. So, but I believe this, his work in the community, his work in the nonprofit space, giving his time and energy to people outside our university and his fellow students, it was really remarkable what he did. In such a short period of time, he impacted, and I really believe this, left our program and university in a better place because of his performance, his personality, his work ethic, and I think all the things that you really try to get right when you take or convince someone to come from one school to the next. Like, I'm sure we got him right.
Well, he didn't play in the NCAA tournament, but he did go out to Phoenix, played in the All-Star game last week.
Yeah.
Participated
and
in
had
that.
16 points and did well. And really, one of the other things I liked for him is playing in that game, it sets him up. He's in a Portsmouth Invitational, which is a big event for his pro aspirations, both overseas and in the NBA, where, you know, sometimes it's the jitters. It's been a while since you've been out there. And I think doing what he did in Phoenix will serve a good purpose to have him even more ready next week in the what they call the PIT tournament. Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, selfishly, Quincy was a great friend to me while he was here. He went out of his way to help me with my shot quite a bit. You know, yeah. Me and Paul were out there. We get shots up before practice, after practice. And Quincy, he gave me a lot of pointers, so I won't forget that anytime soon.
No, but it is nice having such an ambassador for your program, right? Somebody that can go out there, and especially in a year like this where, you know, I think a lot of fans might look at the 16-18 record and they don't make the NCAA tournament. A lot of guys go to the portal, and then you think to yourself, well, what do you take away from a year like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly some memories from a guy like Quincy, and then, of course, you have Davion, guys that you're building for the future that you're returning, but memories there still from Quincy.
Yeah. And, you know, when I reflect back on this season, and we've already done this a couple times, I go back to the Bahamas when we were on our international trip. It was the reality of what do we look like if Zach Fremantle can't play this year or would miss some time? And in Jerome's case, if he doesn't get cleared or doesn't join us at any point. And in fairness to our group, it was irreparable to a certain extent. We were limited from the front court experience and depth. And I think you felt that all the way through. And one of the things that I've learned this past year as a coach is when you're in a conference as challenging as the Big East is, and the season is now 20 games, it's actually going to be a minimum of 21 because you're definitely going to play one game in Madison Square Garden in the Big East tournament against the Big East team. This year we played two. Think about who the second game was in the Big East tournament, the national champs. So if you're playing that, part of what I think you have to build is an inherent depth so that you can play through injuries, big or small, foul trouble, which can happen, sometimes inconsistent play from a shooter, a big man, et cetera, right? Those that can be the most consistent all the way through 20 games have the biggest advantage of actually being an NCAA tournament team. That may sound very straightforward, but how you put that together is everything. And right now, that's what we're doing. You know, it's like the analogy that I've heard recently that I really like is you're flying a plane and simultaneously repairing it and putting it together at the same time. And so that's how you build a program now. You do it 1 year, one increment at a time, because you really can't count on anything beyond the next 12 months. And I'm not speaking for Xavier. I think that goes to the state of college basketball. It's how it's currently constructed. So again, I go back to where we began. In some ways, whatever the record ended up being, I believe we fought to the end. But there's no doubt that in and around the second week of February, in our best attempt to keep moving forward and playing our best, I believe the level of play, our best, we weren't able to get to that level we needed to have a couple of those breakthrough games. To some degree, we wore down. You know, talking to Dez after the season, Quincy after the season, and Davion, you think about how many minutes all three of those guys played, how consistent they were, how much we asked of all three of them, both on offense and defense. Physically, they needed a break. They really did. They needed a break, and I think that tells you everything you need to know.
I'm curious going into the offseason here, and it's hard to sit here and talk about the portal and everything with specifics because you're not allowed to comment on a lot of these guys until they're actually here on campus. But as far as scheduling goes, so yesterday as we're recording this, we're sitting here on Thursday. Yesterday it was reported, John Rothstein reported that the Big East Big 12 challenge is not going to happen going forward in the future. And the senior associate commissioner of the Big East for men's basketball, Dan Leibowitz, put out a tweet and said, "We'd love for this to continue. Same with the Gavitt games, which are also not going to continue going forward." I'm curious from your perspective when putting together a schedule, there's obviously pros and cons to not having control of the game that you're going to be assigned, but also you're guaranteed a very high level game. So losing the Big East, Big 12 challenge, Gavitt games, how does that affect what you guys are doing now going forward with the schedule?
Yeah, so number one, I'm thrilled to be a part of the Big East. I played in the Big East. Being here at Xavier in the Big East is awesome. I think it's the best conference in the country, in large part because everybody is so invested and cares so much. I don't think any of us can understate what it feels like to play in Madison Square Garden in 2024, 2023, beyond, and what that conference tournament continues to be and what it's even becoming. I believe it's becoming even bigger if that's possible. So, you know, Dan and Val, who run our league at the top, the presidents of all of our universities, you know, Dr. Hanich, Greg Christopher, I mean, they are amazing. And this league is bigger than all of us. I don't know why we need to play in the Gavitt games other than the great respect for what Dave Gavitt did for all of us. And I'm not referring to that, but a partnership with the Big Ten or a partnership with the Big 12. I have no idea why that's a bad thing that is going away. I have a lot of ideas of why it's a great thing for our league. One of which is this: we don't play an 18-game schedule anymore. We play a 20-game Big East schedule. With those remaining 11 games, an exempt tournament, all of us have a couple already built-in series. For example, I think I speak for Seton Hall. I believe they play Rutgers every year, home and away. It's a New Jersey big game for both programs. It's a Big Ten, Big East challenge. Here at Xavier, it's the Crosstown Shootout. UC is now in the Big 12. So we play a Big 12 team either home or away every year. So I don't have control over 11. I have control over 10. When you go to an exempt tournament, which, again, that's our choice whether we want to or don't want to play. But if you make a choice to play in that, for example, we're going to play in Fort Myers, Florida next Thanksgiving, and we're going to play two of these three, Michigan, Virginia Tech, or South Carolina. Three formidable programs, right? An ACC, a Big Ten, and an SEC team. Two of those games are going to also be played away from home. So I already now have three built-in games in addition to the 20. So now I'm down to, what, seven or eight? Confidence, being able to fill out the CentOS Center and play our, what I think we want to play, 17 home games. Like, I want to build that the way I want to build it. If we have a great team and we feel like we can be a high NCAA tournament team, trust me, we can make that very challenging. But in a year where there's a lot of change and uncertainty, part of us getting wins, building our character, building, learning through trial and error, gaining confidence so that we enter league play with the most wins we can, man, that's super important too. When you add the Big 12 or the Big 10 Challenge in addition to everything that I gave you, it's taking the decision-making out of my hands, and it's my fate. I know better than anybody who our team does and does not have, who we are and who we aren't. So allow me, with the help of Greg Christopher and our coaching staff, put our program, Xavier, in the best position. And I think what you learn is when teams and programs within our Big East Conference do that, that helps all of us. It really does. This past year, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to give me a trophy for playing at Purdue and playing them tough for a long period of time, or playing Houston at home and really in a hard-fought game we lost. They were both one seeds. Our team didn't need either of those games. And quite frankly, we not only hurt ourselves, but we could have brought another win or even two to the table, which might have prompted a team like Seton Hall from being on the bubble to in the tournament. So I feel pretty strongly about that. I think I have the math to support that, and I don't really understand why. Now, when the new Big East was formed, UConn wasn't in the Big East, and you're trying to get on television even more. You know, you're trying to build your new brand even more. I wasn't here, so I can't speak to that. I can see, though, why those types of challenges could have been more meaningful then. Right now, our conference stands on its own two feet. We have the two-time national champ as part of it. We have Villanova, who've won two more. We have teams in our league that are thriving and coaches. This league, playing a 20-game schedule, it's never been better or stronger, I don't think, for a long, long time anyway. So with that, let's adjust and evolve to maybe helping each of us so we can get the most teams in the NCAA tournament. Sure. Any decision we make as a conference, that should be the starting point. And I don't agree with why the Big 12 or Big 10 Challenge needs to be a part of that. By the way, my peers, the 10 other coaches, they could disagree with me. That's how I feel. And I have my reasons.
And look at the name of the podcast.
That's right. On my podcast, I can give you my opinion. For sure.
No, but you mentioned UConn, and I read a story. You talked to friend of the show, John Fanta, and I think the quote that you gave him, he was trying to put into perspective how talented UConn is. And I think you said something along the lines of they're the best team you've ever seen or coached against. And after they won their second national championship, ending a streak of 12 straight NCAA tournament games, winning by more than 13 points, a lot of the reaction from national media was like, this will never happen again. And for a lot of the reasons that you talked about earlier, mainly the transfer portal, roster turnover from year to year, name, image, and likeness stuff. And I'm just curious, like, do you think that the days of kind of these college basketball dynasties might be behind us, or can teams actually survive year over year and be at the top of the sport for extended periods of time?
I mean, Adam, I think UConn's goal will clearly be to three-peat. I mean, based on the number of players that potentially could come back and how that they can get into the transfer portal if they choose so, or bring in a high school player to add to what they've already done. I think they have a good recruiting class already. I mean, they will be probably preseason one, two, three. I don't know. But Caravan, you look at him and Samson Johnson, and I'm not Danny Hurley. I'm not on their staff. So I'm just speaking on the Sean Miller podcast. I don't know who's coming back. But I think if they can get a group back, sure, that will be their goal. Who can say that they couldn't do it three times in a row based on what they've done the last 2 years? And so I wouldn't disagree. I would disagree that dynasty or somebody else can't do that again, because you can fix your problems easier than ever before. That's the other way, I think, of looking at kind of the new state of college basketball. But to give UConn credit, me as a coach, head coach, 19 years, never have coached a team that is better overall than them. Going to my assistant coaching days where I was at NC State for 5 years, Carolina and Duke were both there. Dean Smith was the coach at Carolina. And then Bill Guthridge took over. Coach K was really in his prime, had some amazing teams. A couple of the teams that Coach K had reminded me of the feeling that you had playing against them when you played UConn this year. And I also would say, and I told Dan this, just my opinion again, but I thought UConn was better this year than they were last year. We weren't as good, obviously, but we beat them twice a year earlier. I just believe that our team 2 years ago, if we would have played this year's UConn team, I don't know if the results would have followed. They just were equally good or great on both offense and defense, and they were equally great on offense, both in transition and in the half court. And they could sub seamlessly from the bench with zero drop off. And it's just their experience together, their confidence. They were a machine, they are a machine. And look, you have to tip your cap when you see something great like that. And that's what I see in UConn. I see greatness, and we're all chasing them.
It's interesting hearing you talk about reloading, and you spent so long starting the show talking about the transfer portal and what this landscape of the sport has become and all this turnover. What do you think's the biggest thing that you've learned about players now in the portal, now that you've done it for a couple of years and experienced this? What do you think the biggest thing is, whether it's on the court that players are looking for, off the court? I know we talk a lot about NIL. What do you think you've learned the most about this whole process of the portal and what guys want?
Yeah, you know, I think the number one thing is you can't make a blanket statement. You know, what I think one person is looking for, another family could be completely different.
Yeah.
You know, I think what we're all trying to do is get it right on our end so that, for example, whatever in fact they are looking for, that you have, mm-hmm. and that it fits both parties. That's when great things happen. You know, in three of our transfers in the last 2 years, Davion McKnight, Quincy Oliveri, and Sule Boom, we really, in fact, had the opportunity that they were looking for. We brought it to life for them so that they could see it, but they came in here and they really delivered. They put the work in. They bought into Xavier as a university, our locker room. They were great teammates. They were coachable. They were a lot of fun to be around. And in each of their respective years, Davion has one more, but he's only been with us for a year. If you evaluate each of the three of them, you can really point out that they've had arguably their best overall years as a college player. That's what it translated into, and that's something we're really proud of, and we want to continue to do that as we, you know, add different players, sure, and people to what we do moving forward.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier Basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com.
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Milano, Italy.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Abuja, Nigeria.
And
I chose Xavier University.
For its education.
More opportunities.
For passion.
Because it felt like home.
The community.
Campus life.
D1 basketball.
Because I love Cincinnati.
I came here
to be a Musketeer.
I am.
I am.
I am.
And we are the faces of Xavier.
Welcome back here to the Sean Miller Podcast. Coach spending a few more minutes with us. Much appreciated. I do want to pivot a little bit, though. I remember the very first time we sat down to record an episode, sort of off air in between takes, you asked Paul and I, you said something basically to the effect of like, what was your favorite thing about last season, about being around the team and watching the season? And I remember my answer then, and you didn't ask us this question this year, but I have a great answer for you. You know, as we've pointed out on this show, a lot of times we come to practices, and this happened to be a weekend practice. It was a Saturday afternoon practice. And at the end of practice, the guys get in a huddle, they all stretch. When they're done stretching, you walk out on the floor and you talk to them for a little bit. And this was a talk you gave them that I will never forget. And I'm going to let you tell it on this episode. But it was one of these things where it was like, when you got done talking, I was like, man, I have never doubted for a second that you're where you're supposed to be doing what you're supposed to be doing. So I know that's a lot of buildup, but can you tell us about the goldfish you had when you were in college?
Yeah. So... Yeah, the goldfish. I'm not sure why. Was I telling the team that this year?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it was, well, I know exactly when it was. Going into my freshman year at Pitt, I was given a great opportunity to play a lot. And it was unique in that it was kind of like how Sule Boom came in as a missing piece to a team that other than him had been together before. That's how I would describe what I walked into as an incoming freshman point guard. You know, we had Demetrius Gore, who would have been a senior, Jerome Lane, who would have been a junior, Charles Smith, who came back for a senior year. Those are three NBA players. Demetrius has passed away, believe it or not. Jerome, you know, he broke the backboard on great rebounders in the history of college basketball, played in the NBA for a long time. That year, he was the 18th pick in the draft. Charles was the third pick in the draft and had a long NBA career. I set all that up because I also came in as part of the number one recruiting class in the country. Calipari was one of the assistants. He recruited most of us to Pitt, so that's the context. We came in very highly ranked, top 10 in the country. And me as a freshman, there was a lot asked of me to be able to play alongside those guys. And almost the way I looked at it is don't screw it up, you know? So one of our early games is we were playing at Oklahoma. Billy Tubbs was the coach. And that's when there weren't nearly as many games on television, not nearly as many channels. ESPN was just entering its prime. But CBS on Saturday or Sunday, that was like the network, the game you wanted to be on. They have a version of it now, but it gets flooded because there's so many other choices, right? Back then, I feel like everybody watched that CBS game. So it was Pitt at Oklahoma. They had Stacey King, and they had a backcourt of Mookie Blaylock and Ricky Grace. One of the Grant brothers was with Stacey King. Billy Tubbs was the coach. They were really good. We were really good. And at the time, one of these guys I named, Mookie Blaylock, had just come from a junior college. And he was a really highly touted junior college player, but not everybody knew him. Again, it's December. It's his first year, but he's a junior. It's my first year, I'm a freshman. If you remember how Oklahoma would have played, they pressed the entire game. And I've never had that feeling as a player since or before that in my lifetime of how up against it I was to be able to bring the ball up the court. I mean, I felt like I was in junior high and everybody in the game was in college. And I've never played against a one-on-one defender or anybody who could steal the ball like Mookie Blaylock. You guys can look this up. But still today, if he's not the all-time steal leader in the 2 years that he played, I guarantee you he's right there. And I think he broke the all-time record in that season or the next season. By the way, he played in the NBA maybe for 12, 13, 14 years too. So he was really, really good. But we lost, and I'm going to take full responsibility because of me. And not only because I couldn't make a shot, but I was in over my head. It was just bad. To the point where I had this mustache because I was trying to look older. And I actually shaved the mustache when I got back to Pittsburgh because I was like, I'm not faking anybody out, and I need a restart here. So then the season ended. I did some good moments. I ended up being the Big East Freshman of the Year. At the time, it was quite an honor. I will tell you in large part because every coach, like these coaches in the Big East, they're all in the Hall of Fame. Coach Carnesecca, Coach Massimino, PJ Carlissimo, Coach Calhoun, they will all tell you that if they were coaching against Pitt in that year, they had one emphasis, let Miller beat you. Deal with all the other guys, right? So anyway, so that season ended well. But the problem was we had to play Oklahoma the next year. Again, the game was on CBS. It was at home. And we had a good group of younger players. But those three that I mentioned, Jerome Lane, Charles Smith, and Demetrius Gore, they all left. They all went to the NBA or graduated. So to show you how I was or am wired, I had such stress about how it felt to play against Mookie Blaylock that I was looking for any edge to have a great summer, in large part, so that when that game came to us in December, that I could pass the test and never have that sick feeling again. So my wife can be my witness because we were together at that point. I bought this goldfish at some point in the summer and I named the goldfish Mookie. And I fed the goldfish every day. I put the goldfish right above my bed in my dorm room. And I looked at him every day and I can't remember how long he lived, but obviously, goldfish don't have a long life. Eventually, he dies. I can remember actually getting his second one and naming him Mookie too. But I had this goldfish almost all the way until we played Oklahoma. And I worked at it. I mean, I'm talking about like every day. I had some form of a do something to be ready for this experience. Sure enough, remember, we lost at Oklahoma. We won the game. And I didn't play great. But I believe I got through that whole game maybe with one turnover. And I was clearly much more ready and prepared to at least be able to function and help my team win versus being the reason my team lost. And it taught me a lot of lessons. And it's probably the reason this year, I can't even remember why I went into it. But, you know, there's different levels of preparation and will. Everybody thinks they're prepared. I do what the coach says. I listen in film. You know, I stayed after practice and worked on my craft. And then there's like a whole nother level. And for me, as a player, I always felt like I needed that other level to compete, to be able to hang in there to in the Big East Conference at who I was physically. And that was the edge that I looked for. But it was a great experience because I passed the test. And what it proved to me is, you know, to some degree, when you become obsessive and you have great preparation and will towards a common goal, your chances of getting to that goal and realizing it are much greater. So having a great summer, getting ready for a challenge like, can we beat UConn, to I have to improve my three-point shooting, you know, it depends the level of commitment you're willing to make.
I love that story.
Josh, true story.
We gotta add a goldfish up here somewhere, Josh. Throw it up there.
No, I heard you tell that, and I sat there and I thought, man, like if my coach said that to me, I'd run through all the walls. I would know for sure that like he's gonna make me a better basketball player is the way I felt about that.
No, and you know, passion is a part of this, and you know, just you know, I would much rather pull a player back and say, come on, too much, relax, take a day off, you're too hard on yourself, then come on now, we need more of you. But you're ready, you're alive. And I think that when we've had our best teams here at Xavier, whether it was the first time that I was here or, you know, year one and year two of kind of the new beginning here, you know, they were filled with guys on a team that had a chip on their shoulder, that had a cause above and beyond just the next game. You know, B.J. Raymond, I mean, he's a great example. I mean, he was always out to prove to the world that he was better than he was given credit for. And there's just so many examples. David West, I think, is the ultimate example that he always had a chip on his shoulder because he felt like he was overlooked in high school when he was younger by coaches or programs that he should have been recruited by and wasn't. And he was out to prove to the world in a really good way that, look, I'm better than you gave me credit for. It was a deeper meaning this game had for him and played itself out for him.
That'll do it for today's episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. For all of you listening and watching, just so you all know, of course, this is transfer portal season. This is the height of the transfer portal. So you may not hear from Sean for the next week or two as things settle down, the calendar gets real busy with everything going on. So just bear with us with the schedule for the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks as we get into the offseason and get settled. But we've had a lot of questions, Adam, about what the offseason looks like and what the content calendar is going to look like from the Sean Miller Podcast for the next few months. And I think you and I are both really excited about what this podcast allows us to do in the offseason, not just around Xavier basketball, but highlighting Sean as a coach, as a person, as a former player, the relationships that he has built over the years with other coaches, guys that he's played with, broadcasters, whoever it might be, that we're excited to bring on, especially because once the portal dies down, it'll be a lot easier to schedule without the season going on some of those guests.
Yeah. I mean, you think about what we did during the season when a lot of times we were handcuffed by, okay, they have practice today and tomorrow, then they have a game. And a lot of the guests that we got were JP McCura coming back for his Hall of Fame induction.
Yep.
Justin Dolman coming down to watch a Xavier game and being kind enough to record after that game. B.J. Raymond on the coaching staff, Chris Mack back in town to visit his family for Christmas. They were the guests that we were able to get during the season were very much a matter of circumstance. In the off season, they're going to be guests that we actually target and say, man, Sean wants to have this guy who's a big time college coach who can't come on during the season, or a guy whose NBA season is about to end and he's going to have some offseason free time to come out to Xavier and come on the pod. So I just think the freedom of movement that we're going to have with scheduling these and other people's availability is going to really make it enticing.
Freedom of movement. I thought you weren't a big officials guy.
I'm not a big officials guy, but that is a fun phrase, Paul.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to today's episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. Thanks as always to our producer, Josh Simstrott, for putting this all together. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, Deer Park Roofing, and for everything they've done here in the first year of the podcast. To our official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and our friends at TGE Solar. This has been the Sean Miller Podcast. We will see you next time. Thank you for watching and listening. Also, make sure you follow us.
Yep.
At Sean Miller Pod on all social media channels. Now I'm signing off.
And be a goldfish, Paul.
Be a goldfish. The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Payroll Partners, where you're not just a number. That means providing a best-in-class HR and payroll experience that was built on award-winning technology and live support customer service with a dedicated payroll specialist who's just a phone call away. You shouldn't have to choose between technology and customer service. At Payroll Partners, you get both. Payroll Partners is locally owned and operated by a proud Xavier alum. Visit payrollpartners.net. That's payrollpartners.net. The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit deerparkroofing.com.